The new Starz series, Mary and George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but shockingly, it is. With next to nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villers sets her handsome and charming son George on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. This show is full of wit, scandal, action. You won't be able to look away. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Starz and the Starz app.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Rachel Goes Rogue.
Welcome to another episode of Rachel Goes Rogue. This is your host, Rachel Savannah Levis. Being in the public eye, especially now with this podcast and choosing to put myself out there, I am opening myself up for judgment and comments on social media. And I think that's just part of being in the public eye, unfortunately. It's a trade-off almost. Like, I gave up my right to privacy in a way, and by choosing to put myself out there, I have to accept the criticism that comes my way. But some of these comments are just, they're heartbreaking to read. And it seems like they are meant to hurt me. I've been staying away from social media because I would just rather not read that and consume what other people's perception of me is, because I know who I am. I know what's true in my heart and how much work I've done on myself to better myself. I'm with my iHeart producers. They have some questions, and I wanted to read some of these comments and express the feelings that come up.
So when you read these comments, does it affect your sense of self?
It can. It can if I let it. I think that the comments are very shaming, and I already feel shame around my actions and what I did. And I did mess up. I recognize that. And so when somebody's bringing that up and bringing that up and pointing that out and not letting you evolve as a person, it keeps you in this certain mindset where it's like, oh, maybe I'm not doing enough. Maybe I haven't grown and changed. Like, maybe I am bad. You know, all of those things do creep in. If you read enough of these comments, you start to believe it.
In one of the comments, someone said her time in whatever joke of a program she attended was clearly a waste of time and money. She didn't learn a damn thing. How does that make you feel?
I know that I've learned a lot from my time in this recovery center. I really dedicated myself to grow and to look at my patterns and my behaviors. And I knew I had an issue, and I wanted to get help. And that's why I decided to stay longer than the 45 days. I also knew that the environment that I was in was bringing out the worst in me. So reading something like that, it's a joke of a program and a waste of time and money. Like, I know that it was a great investment, because relatively I'm on the younger side of people figuring out their life and making big changes. But then I also think it's like minimizing. It's minimizing my experience.
Somebody wrote, Raquel is the kind of woman that is loved by men and hated by women. She looks for validation from men. She's pathetic. How does that make you feel?
Well, I can accept the fact that I was seeking validation in men. And that was a huge part of the problems that I was having. I am choosing to prioritize healthy female friendship in my life. And it looks a lot different than the way that I've been acting before and my priorities before. So I think it's just unfortunate that people are able to label somebody and judge somebody for their absolute worst behavior and then be like, nope, that's you forever in this box and you're not capable of change.
Somebody said this girl is doing herself no favors. Instead of cleaning up her image, she's coming off as petty and immature. How does that feel?
Okay, maybe I am petty and immature sometimes. We're human. Like, I, with the whole Katie Dana Instagram post, yeah, that was petty, but I'm able to acknowledge that. I'm able to be aware of that and I'm able to take accountability and change. Like, I'm choosing better for next time.
Okay, this one I think is pretty low. I'm betting Raquel's adopted family is regretting adopting her right now. They're probably so embarrassed and humiliated by her actions and stupidity. They certainly didn't bring this horrid mistake of cells into the world to create this maelstrom on global TV.
Gosh, this horrid mistake of cells into the world. Jeez, yeah. That is low. Reading comments like this makes me question like who this person is and how they think, the dialogue that goes on in their own brain. And I'm even hesitant to talk about my family because anytime I bring my family up, people see that as an opportunity to, I don't know, get creative with these comments and take some jabs that are so low and unnecessary. I'm very blessed to have the family that I do with my adoption, and they are still proud of me, even though I've made some mistakes. I think they're more concerned for my safety than anything, and they're very proud of how far I have come, and they're very happy that I'm not on the show anymore. So yeah, reading something like this, it's very painful.
So some fans have said this: I was riding hard for you until you decided to sue the person you victimized.
Choosing to take legal action was not something that I chose lightly. I really had to weigh all of the pros and cons, and one of the cons was the public's reaction to it. I saw this coming, and that's just something that I had to debate and realize that if I want to seek legal action against Tom, then I also have to seek legal action against Ariana. Yeah, what I did was not morally right, but recording and distributing a video is also not right. So, in, you know, they're two separate instances. One is illegal. So that's hard. It's hard, like, you know, because I do feel guilty. Yeah, I feel guilty for, you know, potentially causing more pain than I've already caused somebody. But then I also take a look at like what I've been through, and I've been through a lot, and I just don't think that it's right or fair or just. If we're all out to hold each other accountable, then I guess I'm doing the same.
Here's another one, Rachel. She's not changed in the slightest. I thought for your mental health, you were staying away from VPR. Now her podcast is talking all about people on VPR. FYI, she still sounds like she's crying with every sentence she speaks.
Yeah, unfortunately, this is just my voice and I've had to accept it. But I would like to stay away from Vanderpump Rules. Unfortunately, this show is still bringing me up as a topic of discussion and as a storyline point. So it's only natural for me to want to not only defend myself, but like share my experience with this, because there's more to the story just than this black and white, this is a villain, this is a hero, and that's it. Like, it's way more nuanced than that. And I am prioritizing my mental health by not being an active participant in this show any longer. They're bringing me in involuntarily. I have no choice what they say about me, but with time, I will be removed from Vanderpump Rules. And I honestly don't feel like I am dissing the cast members of Vanderpump Rules. I think I'm sharing things honestly and being reflective of my relationships that I've had with certain people from more of a healed place. So my perspective is a little bit different. Me prioritizing my mental health may look different than what you would think that it is. But for me, having my own podcast is part of what makes me feel so empowered today, that I get to reclaim my narrative. I get to, as much as possible, take away, you know, Vanderpump Rules' power to create whatever narrative they want about me, which they're doing anyway. And I'm being honest and truthful and being authentic to who I really am and choosing to share that with others. I think it's important to remember that Vanderpump Rules has been part of my life for all of my 20s, like nearly 9 years that this show has been part of my human experience. And so by talking about it, I'm able to process through it. And it is this developmental process where eventually, yeah, I will be able to stop talking about Vanderpump Rules. But I feel like it's very unrealistic to expect somebody to completely disconnect and disassociate from part of their life that has been so integral into their development of who they are today.
Somebody wrote, did she say he didn't have enough integrity to tell her himself? You got to be kidding me. Where was her integrity when she didn't tell her friend she was smashing her man?
No, I totally get that comment. And as I was saying that to Joe, that Schwartz didn't have enough integrity to tell her, I was fully aware that I did not have integrity in that moment to tell Ariana, but I have more integrity now. I own up to the fact that I'm not perfect. Yeah, I didn't have integrity during that time. I was not honest and did not tell Ariana that this is going on. And that was a choice that I made and something that I have to live with. One of the comments says, she has done zero work on herself and this proves it. She's still suing Ariana, which is shitty alone. Can we stop giving this mistress a platform of listen so she can disappear? Gosh, those comments that are like, can you just disappear or go away? I click on their profile and they're following me. I'm like, okay, like you don't need to comment on my stuff. Just like unfollow me then if you don't want to see it. It's so bizarre. But then it's also like, okay, what does disappear mean? Are you wishing me not to live anymore on this planet? Because sometimes my thought process goes there. It's a lot. It is, because you just feel so damaged and unworthy of love and acceptance. And it can get to a dark place very easily if you let it. I feel like the work that I've done on myself has gotten me to the place where comments like this affect me less. And like, what a relief. It's bizarre too, because I feel like there's these people that write stuff like this But then there's like people that I will meet in person that approach me and they say that they listen to my podcast and love it. And they acknowledge the work that I've done and they feel like they've learned something by listening to my podcast is so rewarding. Like those in-person comments like that is like what makes my week. And so I choose to focus on the in-person comments and I give way less weight to the comments that people make online. I feel like I need to write out 10 affirmations to counteract all of those negative, mean comments because focusing on the negative is just going to bring in more negativity and I do not need that in my life. I don't know why people choose to be so mean in the comments and I choose to be kind to myself and not to speak to myself that way. But I want more clarity on like why people are so mean in the comment section and why the cast is so mean to each other on this show. I have a therapist joining me today. Dr. Robbie is a nationally known psychotherapist and award-winning reporter. She has appeared on programs like Nightline, CNN, The View, and Wendy Williams. So let's get into that. I want to explore more on why people feel, I don't know, entitled to say some of the things that they say online.
It's such a good question. And we're seeing it a lot now, obviously, because of social media. And people can respond in real time. So there isn't that cool off period. You know, back in the day, if you were really angry about something, or if you had an issue, let's say with a celebrity or TV show, you would have to take the time to write a letter or an email and find out where to send it. And there were a lot of steps involved. And usually in between having that experience, emotional experience, and having to write something down and send it, you know, the question was, is it really worth it? Is it really worth my time? But now it's so easy. You don't have to have that cool off period of time. And there's something about not being face to face with somebody and being anonymous that all of your aggression can come out and there's a decreased level of empathy. When you see somebody live face to face, they're more human. They're more three dimensional. But when you're doing it through the screen, it's like anything goes. And I think our society is crumbling because of that emotionally.
That's so true. Yeah. I remove myself because I'm seeing things through like a reality TV lens. And I think the way that the show edits people, it dehumanizes them. So it allows for people to feel more entitled to say whatever they're thinking because they don't have, maybe they don't have like that same level of empathy as you would in person. But then also removing myself and just thinking about, you know, this next generation that was brought up on social media and the pressures of appearing a certain way. And it's you only really see the highlights of somebody's life on Instagram or TikTok or Facebook even. It's just interesting to think because my generation, I mean, Instagram came out like my last year of high school. So it's a weird transitional period.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that's interesting.
So let me pick up, Rachel, with what you said, because you talked about two different scenarios that are both very real and slightly different. So with reality TV, what we see is more of a judgment TV, right? Mm-hmm. It's set up like a novella. And there's the good person, there's the bad person. We tend to see things in terms of good and bad. We like that. It's not complicated. And so people are edited to look a certain way. It doesn't tell the whole story. It's not supposed to, right? It's like a live soap opera. And with reality TV, the audience that's watching becomes very judgmental. And that's part of the fun of it for them. They get to feel morally superior. They get to feel superior and therefore feel entitled, either because they feel they know you or your story or the people in the reality TV story. They're invested in the story and would comment. And it's easier to be mean in some cases than it is to be nice. And in some cases, that's very cathartic, because if we're being really mean and devaluing to somebody else, somebody we don't know, or somebody we feel like we know, even though we don't, then it allows us to be kinder to ourselves. And it really, really helps a person to feel, yes, it helps them to feel better about themselves, because it's helping them to not attack themselves. If I'm attacking somebody on the screen, if I'm attacking another person, then I'm not attacking myself, because usually people have relationships with others that are parallel to the relationships they have with themselves. So you can think of it as like a kind of a therapeutic intervention that reality TV does. It allows people to feel morally superior, and they may feel envious because this other person is famous or has money or has it easier, or whatever the case may be. And a way to equalize that divide is by attacking, is by devaluing, is by feeling, you know, morally superior to these people that they are judging. And that is part of the appeal of reality TV. You get to sit and feel that you're better than these other people. And the problem is that, first of all, reality TV is filled with people who kind of, in a way, didn't understand or sign up for celebrity culture in terms of acting. So maybe an actor or a singer might expect, okay, there's some negative reviews that come with the art that I put out there. Or even newscasters or big podcasters, they might say, you know what, I understand. Like, people are going to like me and people are not going to like me. But with reality TV, it's kind of like newbies that are finding their way along the way. And you're real people. And words do hurt. And they can be damaging. And I think that there is that disconnect. But in terms of social media, let's say for the average person, I was just talking with my sister. And she was like, you know, my daughter, my niece, looked beautiful for her prom. I mean, perfection. There was no reason not to put up many photos, but she was concerned about the likes, about the comments. And it's a lot to deal with, especially when you're young and growing and your self-esteem is very vulnerable.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know what. God, if you show me, God, if you tell me, God, if, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick.
I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us. They burned us and subject us to really horrible, cruel and unusual punishment.
After my personal experience at Provo Canyon School, I was shocked to learn that a man named Robert Litchfield, a man who got his start at the school that I went to, would go on to create a multi-million dollar empire.
He was trying to brand us, so we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
The Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They prey on, you know, a parent's really natural and beautiful love for their children in a really, really, unfortunately, effective way.
At this time in my life now, if someone presented this program to me, and not just because I've already experienced it, sham, scam, beware.
Listen to season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I think you brought up a good point with the MV piece, because I was kind of researching the concept of Schadenfreude, the German saying where basically people derive joy out of seeing other people's harm or misfortune.
Yeah, or failures.
Or yeah. Failures, yeah. And I think maybe, like, this is my running theory, because as I'm getting healthier and removing myself from the toxicity that is Vanderpump Rules, I now see it so much differently. Like, I see it as the toxic, dysfunctional group. And not only is the group dysfunctional, but like then you're put on a platform for everybody to comment and make judgments on your life. Yeah. So I'm trying to understand like how somebody enjoys watching it, because I don't necessarily enjoy watching it.
You know too much. Well, there are two things that go on. One, this is sad but true, but when we see a lot of chaos, it's more interesting, right? In the news, we say, if it bleeds, it leads. So people on the show are encouraged to create drama, to be mean, to be divisive. There's an upside to it because they get more play, or people will be more interested in them. And so the show is designed, people on it want to please, and they know what the deal is. If they're part of the drama in the mix, they're going to lead. They're going to be interesting. And if they don't, they're considered boring and not useful. So people within the environment are trying to kind of figure out how to be relevant. And when being relevant is being mean, well, then you just kind of let out your primary impulses. There's no editing. And what we know is if we don't edit what we say, we will have no friendships, because we have a lot of noise in our head and we shouldn't be saying all the noise that goes on in our head. In reality TV, it's the opposite. Say all the noise in your head and let's see what happens. And it'll make for a more interesting show. Mm-hmm. So there's that piece. And I also think that in some ways, it's a displacement, right? We can't talk about our friends that way and still be considered a good friend. You know, we're not going to have relationships in our own personal life if we're saying the most vicious things. We know how that rolls. But if we say really bad things about the people on reality shows or whatever it is, I mean, we can even see it play out in the royal family, right? We don't have any relationship to them, but everybody feels like they know the royal family and can comment. Mm-hmm. It's safe in many ways. There's no consequences. What's going to happen? Free speech? You can say whatever you want. And, you know, for right now, there's an appeal to that. and it serves a function for the audience. I could be mean. I could say mean things, and it's not going to hurt me in my real life. Is that true? Not necessarily. We really do better when we can rise above and be classy and see things for what they are. But there is a safety net in critiquing, you know, socialites, royalty, reality figures, and actors, or just anyone who has a high profile.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like as you explain it, it almost sounds like an excuse for how mean the people can be on this show, especially the girls. And
yeah,
I understand to a certain degree, yes, we're all making a reality TV show for entertainment, but then there seems to be a line that's crossed with complete disregard to how their actions are affecting other people in the group. I'll just give an example. We see, you know, Joe being iced out by the group and being laughed at and talked about. And it's because she doesn't quite fit in like the other girls do. Like, she's not as willing to like show off her hair, and she'd rather wear a baseball cap at the end of the day. And, you know, she feels awkward in this group where she knows she's not necessarily welcome. And Katie put out a tweet saying, "Joe is spooky. I mean, none of us could stand to be around her. Her energy is on par with a crackhead. She is a psycho, and I will also light her on fire with Rachel."
Oof.
And I feel like the problem here is, A, calling somebody a crackhead when they don't do drugs. Like, Joe has ADHD, and, you know, she's more high energy, but that doesn't mean that she's a crackhead. And
yeah,
people are very quick to judge when they don't know you and just know the information that is being put out there. So I feel like that's super damaging. And then also saying, "I will light her on fire with Rachel," I think it's dangerous because it's almost endorsing that type of behavior.
Or what is made okay? You know, there are different rules in different environments. So you bring up a great point. You know, what is the rule within the Vanderpump environment? The rule is be as cruel as you want to be. That's the rule. And the more clever you are at it, the more talked about you'll be, and the more, you know, it's kind of like twerking journalism, more it'll get noticed. I think there's that. But you bring up a really good point in terms of mental illness, mental well-being, and diagnosis. So there are certain people who have a diagnosis which will allow them to be more cruel. And sometimes it's a mood disorder that's unrecognized, where they're just more irritable and nasty. Sometimes it's a character pathology. We hear a lot about narcissism, but borderline personality or people who have sociopathic tendencies may get high off. Well, in the borderline, they see people in terms of all good or all bad. There's no gray. And that's not true, but that's how they experience people. And they can't regulate their own emotions. So they discharge all of that rage because they can't metabolize it themselves the way, let's say, a person who is more well could. So there's the borderline. There's the narcissistic kind of sociopathic tendencies where they really don't have empathy towards another person. And so they don't consider their feelings. The other person doesn't really matter. The only person that matters is themselves. And then there's the point about sadism in general, you know, the act of being mean or intentionally cruel. It helps a person to, in the moment, feel powerful. Kind of this idea of either you're the bully or you're the bullied. And people take two sides. Well, I'm not going to be the bullied, so I better be the bully. And it's kind of this mindset of kind of, again, either or thinking. But when you're in a mean space, you feel momentarily powerful and you're not feeling vulnerable. And, you know, who wants to feel vulnerable? Who wants to cry on the show? Who wants to feel, you know, like a victim? Who wants to show that they're weak? Because the more weak a person is, the more likely these personalities will go after you.
I've experienced it. Yeah. I mean, perceived weakness, because I'm just more of a kind, forgiving person. And that's seen as weakness to some of them because I'm not like as, I guess.
You're not aggressive. You're not aggressive.
I'm not aggressive.
And we're not perfect people. And not only that, okay, so let's talk about like in your situation, you know, you were then, you know, the person, the friend that went with the friend's boyfriend. So there are a lot of people watching and men somehow get off a little easier than women. Women are just way easier to demonize because we expect so much from women that whenever they're not perfect, they get critiqued and smashed, right? So we know that to be true culturally. But the other piece is, you know, it reminds somebody of their own situation. Oh, that person in the show is just like my friend Marianne who did that, you know, and they start to personalize the situation and it's almost like they're experiencing it themselves. I was cheated on or somebody cheated on my boyfriend. And they may even see certain personality traits in the other person that they have in themselves that they don't like. But again, it's easier to critique the other person rather than to own up and say, you know, I have those tendencies too. Like, let's be honest, we all have a tendency to be selfish or impulsive in the moment and not think about cause and effect. So, you know, that's what you're not seeing. People not wanting to own that piece. And it plays out the way you personally have experienced and the way, you know, a lot of people who are high profile have to experience. It's kind of part of the job.
Yeah. There's a thing called justice-based Schadenfreude. And it's a feeling that we experience when someone finally gets what they deserve and that like satisfaction when a murderer or a scammer gets rightfully convicted for their wrongdoings, then we feel that satisfaction. And I think maybe in my situation with, you know, the Scandoval, maybe people were so quick to dogpile on because it was like, this is morally wrong. And we feel deceived by this person because she seems to put up maybe, quote unquote, a front that she's a nice, kind person. But in reality, she's been deceitful and has been keeping lies and not being truthful with her actions. And
you're absolutely right. There's no interest in the nuance.
Like, right.
We don't know why this happened. You know, we don't know the inner dynamics. We don't know what was going on behind closed doors, you know, between Tom and Ariana. We don't know. We have no idea. No clue. And there's no interest in the nuance because that's too complex. That's too difficult. You know, why understand that? Isn't even the point of reality TV, right? It's not like you want, you know, to get your doctoral thesis. You want to watch it because it's easy to watch. There's a good person. There's a pretty person. There's a bad person. There's a rich person. There's an unfit person. There's an addicted person. You know, they almost become their labels. And, you know, it's an easy way, as we said, judgment TV to feel morally superior. And we do like to see the bad guy burn, right? We do like to see, you know, karmic justice. The problem is we don't know the whole story and we may never know the whole story.
Yeah. And that's like one of the reasons why when I was weighing out the pros and cons, which I had a long running list, it was part of the reason why I chose not to go back because I knew that my story wouldn't be represented accurately because I'm a much more complex person than just someone who's labeled as deceitful. And even like the producers would tell me, we have to keep it very basic. Like we have to keep this like a five-year-old can watch this and follow along.
My exact point. It's not a doctoral thesis. Or let's do a deep dive and understand everybody's background. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that'll happen for another class, but not the general public. And that's exactly right. You've been cast, right? You have been cast for better, for worse, for understanding the whole story, probably not. A five-year-old has to understand it. You know, what's five-year-olds cater to five-year-olds? Walt Disney, the princess, prince. And you're smart to take back the narrative of your own story. Because if you go back to that environment, which is not mentally healthy, it would not have been good for you, and you don't need it anymore. Why do you need to head back into a scenario that's setting you up emotionally to have a very difficult time? And the bottom line is, they're interested in producing a great show. They're interested in having a successful show. So the mental health and well-being, you know, it's not top priority. It's somewhere there, you know, where the laws matter. And mm-hmm. when you step out of it and say, I don't need it anymore. I got everything I could get out of it. I got a name. I got exposure. I'm taking it back and telling people who I am. And hopefully they'll see a different side or the other sides of me. There are many different sides to a person.
I'm so lucky that I found a good group of people and creating a new community out here. And hot yoga has been a great way to like find those like-minded people. But I think in general, with the pandemic and all of the struggles that every single person had to face, with financial troubles, with being isolated, with not having, you know, family or community, I think maybe that's the reason why people have short temper or are more mean, or, you know, because we see the people break out in airports or like on a flight and people are videotaping it. There's all those encounters that we just see more often, I feel like. Do you think that that's a correlation?
It's a really interesting question. And certainly the pandemic helped us to view the world differently. And if somebody is really isolated and doesn't have a community they can connect to, it can make them more depressed or angry or anxious and maybe act out and be more impulsive with their emotions. There's that. We also live in a world where everyone walks around with a camera. Or a video.
Yeah. Yeah.
We can tape every single thing that happens that did not happen in the past. So that allows us to see more tumult around us and videotape it and share it and observe it and be shocked by it. So there's more taping going on and sharing, and things can go viral, as we know. But I do think one of the problems is, and this maybe is social media related and maybe not only social media related, that the algorithms get us to connect with people that share our own values, viewpoints, mm-hmm. political ideas. And so we're interacting in a bubble that's like, you're right. Oh, I'm so glad you brought up that point. Why doesn't everybody know it? But we're really interacting with like-minded people, which is easier to do. What we don't know how to do so well is interact with people who have different points of view and not have it devolve into either a verbal altercation or a physical altercation. And what we really need to learn how to do to, first of all, be smarter and just be better developed is, how do you hold space for somebody who has a very different ideology or very different ideas than you have? And how do you have a useful conversation? And I think that's the next step. That's what we need to learn to do culturally. Otherwise, we're just going to be in little bubbles that tell us we're right. And that's a really very dangerous place to live.
Yeah, you're so right. It is very dangerous and feel like a newer thing that we're experiencing, yeah. because what we're consuming on our For You pages or just our feed in general is biased to what we already like and what we already consume.
Right. It's a very dangerous place to be. We also have confirmation bias, where we only mm-hmm. see and read things that confirm our own mindset. And really, the goal to be an intelligent person or a growing person is, let me read something that's not my point of view. And it's a very hard thing to do, but I think our culture would be so much stronger if we learn to have conversations with people who have a different idea about something and hold that space for healthy doubt, where we say, well, you know what? maybe there's more to just my point of view. Maybe there's another point of view that would be just interesting to hear. We don't have to believe in it, but maybe just hearing it makes us a better person, a smarter person, a more valuable person in society.
Yeah, definitely. What about empathy? What is the disconnect that people have when they lack empathy?
Well, there are character pathologies, and that's a problem with your personality that can interfere with empathy. People who are narcissists and maybe even have narcissistic features. So they may not be a full-blown narcissist, but they have those features. They don't empathize with other people. There are certain diagnoses which make it very hard to empathize with others, and just a self-involvement sometimes where we're only looking at things through how we feel about a certain situation. But it's harder, Gail King will say this, it's harder to hate up close. You know, when you see a person face to face, you get more information about them. It's harder to demonize somebody that you're face to face with. And it makes us step back and think, oh, they're a person just like me. Or maybe we have similarity. And, you know, it's harder. But when you don't have that, it's a flat screen. You're never seeing the person. You could just, you know, if you're feeling angry about your life, you're feeling angry because this person reminds you of somebody that you dislike. I mean, in some cases, a lot of the personal judgment is not personal. In fact, it's kind of never personal. It's always about what another person raises for you, you know? So if you see a person and you hate them, you have to ask yourself, why am I hating this person? You know, who do they remind me of? Is it a personality thing, or do they have features that I wish I had and I don't have? It always has to do with the person who is taking that other person in. And so it is really helpful to know it's not personal. It's something is being raised for them that we don't know. And maybe we're not that interested in knowing, you know, but it's really useful information to have. So when somebody's really nasty, it might hurt, but then to say, you know, it's not personal. And some people can't empathize and don't want to empathize, but it's a skill. Being empathetic, and it's considering another person's position. And it helps us to have successful relationships to say, oh, you know, maybe my behavior did impact this other person. Or, wow, I never considered that this other person might have a totally different frame of mind. And we are better people. And we are better friends and family members when we can be empathic. I think that's always the goal, but not everybody is there. Sometimes people just need to stay in their rage because if they don't, they may fall apart or they may have to feel major depression or they may have to kind of feel vulnerable. And not everybody is willing to look at themselves honestly. In fact, a lot of people have a lot of personal blind spots. And that's where therapy can come in, where you look at yourself and you learn more. And it can help you navigate life and friendships and success better.
Going back to kind of the beginning of our conversation, you were saying the reason why people are so mean to other people is because then they don't have to be mean to themselves.
That's
and
right.
So I think, you know, viewing that meanness from a new lens where you take it less personally and you actually see it as like data as of that's how this person thinks. This is how this person maybe even thinks about themselves. Because if you're being reminded of yourself in somebody else's actions or misbehavior and you deny that and you don't want to accept that as your own or, you know, empathize with
it. I think it could be many things, but basically if you're an attacker, right? If you're designed to attack, there are people that engage in self-attack and the only reprieve they have from that self-attack, I'm not good enough, I'm not enough, no one wants me, I'm too old, I'm too young, I'm too dumb, I'm too smart, whatever the case may be. And they get to attack somebody else, which reality TV gives us this beautiful opportunity to do. Then for a brief moment, they have the opportunity to shift their focus from being attacking of themselves to attacking somebody else so they can feel better in the moment. So it's almost like a public service. Public service announcement.
Yeah, if you can handle it. And that's the education part, right? Because for somebody, I don't know, like me, that like goes on to a public platform like this, and I'm not an actor. I didn't do it for, you know, acting opportunities, or I just did it as like a self-development thing to overcome my social anxiety and also to develop thicker skin. I knew I would develop thicker skin. And thank goodness it was a gradual build. Otherwise, you know, if you're put on a platform like this and you haven't had that type of experience and you're being bullied and then you're being bombarded by a bunch of people online and you don't understand the psychological concept behind projection, then it becomes so dangerous, you know? So I understand what you're saying, but I also hear it as almost like an excuse.
It's not an excuse, but the more information we have, the better we are able to make choices. It doesn't mean I'm going to be with my sadistic friend because it's better for them to be mean to me than to themselves. No, I don't want toxic friends. I want friends that feel good about themselves, are successful, so they can celebrate more of life with me. And it's not an excuse, but your instincts were right. I mean, you allowed yourself to be in an environment where it's almost like you took a speed class in learning how to deal with nasty triangulations and, you know, being the subject of a lot of hate. But fortunately for you, you survived it.
Yeah.
And learned from it and benefited from it. There are people who don't have that ego strength, don't have the community, and they start thinking this is always going to be for me. The moment feels like it's never ending. And they can't tolerate the idea of other people thinking they're bad and horrible. And in some cases, it contributes to self-harm. Mm-hmm. And so I think we need to be really careful. And social media is a little bit of the Wild West. And I think we need to edit in a way that we reduce harming people or putting people at emotional risk. We see suicide is up for younger kids. We see depression and anxiety is up. This is all a contributing factor. We are allowing people into our lives that we may not allow into our homes. And that's really something to think about. So if you wouldn't allow them into your home, you have to find a way to not allow them into your head. And I think that there's a responsibility of these companies to monitor and edit out what's not okay to put up on screen. There are certain things that are crossing the line, and I think we need to have the laws catch up to technology and eliminate that from happening and putting people in harm's way.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex and then he's very vulnerable so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know what. God, if you show me, God, if you tell me, God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. ...that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, this might be a controversial question. Do you think that social media should eliminate the comment section?
Oh, well, no, but I think it should be edited, you know, and a person can eliminate it for themselves and put no comments. You know, certainly a person can do that. And if they need to do that, I highly recommend they do it if they need to do it for their psyche. I think it's nice to hear other people's comments, and social media, just like anything else, can be really good or really bad. But it might be, if you're going through kind of a storm, maybe you don't allow the messages in and let the storm blow over, because you don't need, or you, not just you, Rachel, but you, the general public, you know, maybe it's, you know, do you really need to hear everything somebody has a thought about? I don't think so. It's not necessary. Mm-hmm. And these things do stick in our psyche. So, and I do they think, do. Again, the they law do. Should come in. And this comment's not okay. Or they edit it. You know, they look at these comments before they can be posted. I hope that we're moving in that direction.
Yeah, it's still very tricky because I've been dealing with that. And thank goodness that Instagram has the hidden words feature where you can eliminate certain words or ban certain words on your comment section so that when somebody types that word, it won't allow that person to comment. It will just say like this user doesn't allow comments of this kind.
Yeah.
And then they would have to edit it. And people, you know, I still get negative comments. It's not like I've eliminated all the negative comments. People find creative ways to say.
It just means that you're relevant, right? You're part of their conversation. You are in their psyche for whatever reason, because people don't talk about people that no one knows, that nobody cares about, right? Mm. But what I will say is that you can use all of this information maybe to be part of the solution, you know, that somebody who's experienced it, somebody who's been targeted or been victimized by cancel culture even, you know, it's like, it is tough and it's a unique experience. And when you come out the other side and it's not about you personally anymore, then maybe we can make some political changes, because it's a problem and it shouldn't be allowed. I mean, some negativity, okay, we can't be loved by everybody. But there's a line that's being crossed that shouldn't be crossed. And I think people who have experienced it need to be part of that change of changing the laws, changing what's allowed so that we can protect future generations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Can you define the mob mentality? Because I know it dates back to like way back when, I don't know, someone who did something morally wrong would be like up on, you know, they would bring them up on a stage and like guillotine.
Or not. Somebody who was a threat. Think about who was defined as witches, right? I think that they were women. I don't know what they were doing, but they weren't witches, right? Well, the mob mentality is kind of like groupthink. So somebody within that group would never think of maybe hitting a person multiple times. But if they're in a group, there becomes kind of like a group psychology where certain behaviors are made okay that are not okay. And people start to think less individually, and it's more of like a group think mentality. And so their individual ability to know right and wrong as they might as an individual, when they are part of a group, there's something about being part of a community, being part of something bigger than yourself, that can get certain people to suspend certain morality, certain social codes, right and wrong, because there's something about the numbers that get people to feel I'm part of something bigger than myself. It feels right. It feels good. And suspend good judgment.
Yeah.
Or it can work the other way too. I mean, you can have a mob that stands for something great, but when we hear mob mentality, we don't tend to think of, oh, these are morally great people. You know, it's usually an aggressive act where people give themselves permission to behave in really cruel and horrific and horrifying ways.
How do you deal with bullying in real life or online? Would it be like a different approach for each of those circumstances?
Well, I mean, as you said, I mean, there are online tools where just don't have any comments, don't have any likes, eliminate it totally. I was talking to my daughter, who's 21, so she's obviously a different generation than me, and she eliminated TikTok. She's like, it was taking a lot of hours of my time. It wasn't doing anything healthy for me. You know, the algorithms were sucking me in. My sister did it as well. You know yourself and be proactive about choosing mental well-being for yourself in whatever form that takes. So I highly recommend that. You know, you can't always depend on others to take care of you. Sometimes you need to figure out what you need to do for yourself and your own mental health and just do it. When I think about bullying and bullying in schools and how physically aggressive it can get, it's absolutely horrifying. And I say that there, first of all, should be a zero tolerance for bullying. I think that there should be more education about emotional regulation and what our emotions mean to us and how we should handle them, and our tendency to want to pick on people who are weaker because it feels good without really having the empathy. Teaching empathy of how will your behavior impact somebody else, and that bullying really is a community issue. I think it extends beyond the school system and is a community issue where there needs to be a community at large that also gets involved and says, it's not okay.
Mm-hmm. But it's okay for reality TV.
Well, I think the assumption is that people are signing up for it, right? You sign up for it, you get fame, you get money, you get perks, you get this, you know, all bets are off. And again, that's the envy, right? Why are you getting these things and I'm not? Or I would like to get these things too, but I'm not. So there's that. And yeah, I think that there needs to be some awareness.
Yeah. I just think, you know, it's so normalized on the TV screen.
Yeah, it's normalized. Yeah. It's considered okay. And it probably shouldn't, but a lot of things are considered okay that aren't okay. Mm-hmm. You know, and reality TV is just a piece of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe as we evolve, you know, but people always love to have an enemy, right?
Yeah.
When you have a common enemy, then you have a group of supporters.
Let's talk about that for a second. Yeah, because Brené Brown says common enemy intimacy is like a false sense of intimacy where you are bonding with somebody else over having a common enemy. Can you speak more about that?
Sure. I mean, and not only that, it's probably just a form of I love how Brené Brown puts it. It's like a false intimacy, but some people are not capable of intimacy. And that's the only kind of intimacy they can have. Let's have a common enemy, and then we'll form a group together. And it feels good in the moment. And again, we are aggressive people. I mean, when you look at, you know, our primitive impulses and fantasies, you know, Freud said crazy men, you know, murderous men, crazy men act on normal people's fantasies. And it's this idea of we are animals. We have aggressive tendencies, right? That's why laws are in place. Thou shalt not kill, because sometimes people want to, but it doesn't mean you can act on it. But I think in reality TV, when we have a common enemy, and it happens in geopolitics as well, then it is okay to join forces and say, you know, let's put all of our anger and hate in this direction so we can form an alliance. So it is strategic. It is done. But in terms of intimacy, sometimes it's the only kind of intimacy people can have.
Yeah.
They can't do anything else.
Interesting. Yeah. I don't know why, like, Lord of the Flies popped in my mind. One of those classic books that you read in high school.
What do you think the connection is for you?
I think just the chaos, like the utter, you know, no government, no rules, regulations. And I think there was something like with the id and the ego and the super ego, some sort of symbolism with that. And
the id is that. It's like that primary process before we're socialized, right? Mm. And it's like all of these impulses. And if we act on all of these impulses, every single one of us would be in prison. Okay? Every single one of us. And there's only so much freedom people can handle. You know, sometimes people can't handle freedom and they act in really extreme ways. And that's why kind of having a democratic government and laws in place helps people to organize their impulses and thoughts so that they can behave appropriately. But yes, I think Lord of the Flies is a great analysis of what happens when there's lawlessness. Well, there's chaos, because there are going to be people who are out of control. And that's a pretty dangerous place to be, either physically or mentally.
Yeah. And I feel like Vanderpump Rules is very Lord of the Flies, and it's almost like the morality is pick and choose. Like some actions have consequences that are like extreme or fireable offenses, and others are brushed under the rug or even celebrated. And so it's a very muddled, confusing place to be.
And they probably, the rules change a little bit, because it's also based on that interesting concept of money. You know, what's getting more views? What's getting more twerps? Who's the most interesting person? What's getting most talked about? And then the morality and the rules change because everybody wants to feel relevant. And so it's really throwing people into the mix who have a lot of self-interest. And that will shift and change given the rules. And the ultimate goal is to have a successful show. So if that means throwing a balloon in someone's face, then they'll throw a balloon in someone's face because the rules are different. That makes you successful. And we respond to our environment. We really do. Mm-hmm. And our environment can manipulate how we experience ourselves and how we treat others.
Well, I feel like we covered so much. And
so much. It's like a master class.
It is a little master class. Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, you're a pleasure.
I feel like that conversation was so beneficial because when we look at reality TV and we see the way that people are interacting with each other and how it's normalized, we have to remember that that doesn't make it acceptable to treat other people that way in real life. And also, they are real people behind the screen. They are human beings that deserve respect. We all have the choice to be kind. So I encourage you guys to just take a beat before commenting on social media, because your words do matter. Thank you so much for listening to Rachel Goes Rogue. Follow us on Instagram and TikTok for exclusive video content at Rachel Goes Rogue Podcast.
The new Star series, Mary and George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but shockingly, it is. With next to nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villers sets her handsome and charming son George on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. This show is full of wit, scandal, action. You won't be able to look away. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Stars and the Stars app.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.